Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Seeking What They Sought. I am one of your hosts, Anthony Leiter. In this episode, we actually take some time to talk about Easter, and we sort of ask the question, do we as Adventists even know what to do with the holiday of Easter? Thank you guys so much for listening and tuning in, and welcome to the party.
So it was just Easter this last weekend, and here's my hot take. Adventists don't know what to do with Easter.
So by don't know what to do with Easter, you mean like, what do you mean by don't know what to do with Easter?
So have you ever noticed that many churches, maybe to a fault, like it gets too crazy, but most churches that worship on Sundays have like these really upbeat, celebratory services that they just get so excited about the fact that Jesus is alive, and Adventists are over here like deep into being solemn and sad. That's the vast majority. I've never been to an Adventist service that celebrated like even in tone.
I would agree.
If not like, let alone being like churches that worship on Sundays. I don't know about your experience, but that's mine.
I mean, most of the churches I went to didn't celebrate in general.
That's a good point. That's
like
a good point.
The word celebrate involves dancing.
And actually, yes, because there were celebration churches, and those were scary, terrifying, the devil lived there churches.
Yes.
So, okay, Jesse.
I'm actually serious, though. Like that's actually...
That's a thing, right? Yeah.
Celebration,
Pentecostal churches?
Yeah.
Oh, so by celebration you mean like just having a light, happy, cheerful atmosphere. The music is lively. The sermon is upbeat. It gets people, you know, excited. What is it that celebration means to you? Like, what does that mean? Good what does point. That look like compared to an Adventist church versus these other churches you're talking about? What's the difference in the tone that you're thinking about?
I have an example.
Go for it.
So I have some friends that they're part of a church in Seattle, and for this last Easter, they had a giant barbecue, and there was a bounce house, and they did that. This is not this year, but the last one last Easter.
And that was a small. You're talking about up in Anacortes, right?
Yeah.
That was a small. Like what, under 150?
Yeah,
people?
Just a small group of people.
Church, yeah. So like, this was not some mega massive church that was like, let's put on a $70,000 production.
Yeah, so, and so I agree where Jesse's coming from. I feel like in my experience, and I'm curious to hear what you and Sean think, Eric, but yeah, mostly from my life, like I think Easter, I have not seen Easter be celebrated in the same way that one would maybe celebrate other things worth celebrating, like a graduation or a marriage or like a birthday party. You know, like when I think of celebration, that's what I think of. Like, let's throw a homecoming party for someone and like everyone jumps out and say surprise and like.
Yeah, and some churches get excessive. Like there was a church that they rented a helicopter to drop Easter eggs from the sky. And I'm like,
that's wild.
Because Jesus.
That sounds dangerous.
Helicopter crash kills 14 children. Just
half
like
of them
you're
are
just
real
waiting
eggs.
For that.
Hard-boiled.
But like they're punking. It's
scrambled
punking
eggs.
The whole church.
Oh man.
Scrambled eggs from
but
the
I mean
sky.
Like that's excessive, right? Like where you're just like, okay, I don't really see that. This is exciting and hypey, right? But like, it's not, is it really necessary and real? But just from the point of what you're asking, Sean, if I have heard of like celebration type things. Yeah. Go get your cat. What
Sean,
in the world?
Please kill the cat.
She's hungry. She's hangry.
If we're talking about celebration type things, it's like, yeah, you kind of summarized it pretty well. But yeah, a lighter atmosphere, less solemn, more celebratory. Like they're saying things like Jesus is alive, and they're saying it like loud and excited. People have a general like feeling of excitement at coming to the service, and they're like, yeah, like this is going to be awesome. Jesus is alive. There's a huge focus on like a bunch of people are going to come to church. We need to be ready for them. And yeah, like it's just kind of a, it becomes an event. Whereas at Adventist churches, it was like, we find this to be deeply needed theologically, but like it was just very, very solemn and yeah, like not very exciting.
So would you argue, like, for the basis of what we're talking about, would you argue that that's a problem and it should change? Like, do you think that that's, like, it would be better
if we did?
No, Sean,
I'm saying all of this because I think that Adventists absolutely should stay exactly the same as they always have.
I feel like it's a pretty, to me, I don't know, in my personal experience, you know, churches, I'm just rambling here. I think one of the reasons why it's not as celebrated in Adventism, maybe as Sunday churches, is because, you know, we celebrate on Saturday, and Jesus is still in the tomb on Saturday. You know, so it's like, yeah, it's not the same, like, Jesus is risen this Easter morning, you know, like, vibe. And also, I mean, Adventists aren't like, let's jump up and down and praise the Lord kind of people in general.
No, absolutely. Yeah, and I think you hit on something huge, which is, in a, it's like, Jesus is alive! Tomorrow, technically, and we can't gather tomorrow. And, yeah, and this is a huge thing, is, and we can't gather tomorrow because that would be a Sunday gathering, and the, yeah, Lord, that's... forbid we ever gather communally on a Sunday with the purposes of worshiping God.
That's,
it can,
that's
be a work bee.
Other...
We can do an Easter work bee.
Exactly. we can clean the attic. But
Mary,
we can't...
Magdalene came, Jesus was in the garden. She mistook him for a gardener. We're going to do the same thing Jesus,
exactly,
did. That's genius. I love it.
We can clean out the crater roll closet, but we can't celebrate Jesus' resurrection.
Actually, but Anthony, like I, in your, it's humorous and sarcastic, but yeah, like, yeah, isn't that true? I remember people were mad because they had heard that Alex Bryan, who used to be the university pastor at Walla Walla University, they had had some sort of Sunday service at a church he was at back out east, wherever he was, mm-hmm, and that was like, that obviously means, and I'm not joking about this, like, I know we joke about a lot of stuff, but people were legitimately saying, oh, that, you know, that means that he's an apostate, he's a heretic, all these different types of things,
yeah,
because he may have had a service on a Sunday, you know, or maybe even it was a regular thing, but, you know, like, as if that in and of itself is the devil's work, is having,
isn't the,
having a church service on,
isn't
a Sunday.
The hoity-toity theological word ecumenical?
Yes.
Like, yeah, in essence,
if you're associating with other denominations and kind of like joining in for a cause, or like
unity.
like beyond, I don't know. It's usually
the,
I think of the
ecumenism is a synonym for globalism, in essence. Like what globalism is to the world, where everyone comes together and forms one world government.
Yeah.
That's what people are afraid with ecumenism. Is that how you say it? Which is, in essence, all the churches would come together and form this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's like the idea of like slippery slope. Like, oh, if we do this one thing, the context here is like, oh, if we did something on Sunday, that's affirming Sunday churches. And that, mm-hmm, would be the logic, right? That it would eventually get to, oh, well, now we're becoming the apostate, blah, blah, blah. That's the, mm-hmm, that's the logic behind that thinking.
Yeah. So then what Eric is saying, it bleeds directly into that, which is, you know, oh, yeah, like, We believe Jesus is alive, but, you know, we worship on Saturday and Jesus is dead right now, technically, in the story.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, so I feel like as a growing up, Easter weekend, there was kind of more of an emphasis on the crucifixion and the cross.
Yeah.
Than there was, I mean, there's obviously emphasis on the resurrection too, but a lot of times, you know, there's like a Friday night Vespers or something that's special for Easters where we come together and we like do communion and whatnot, but again, we don't usually get together on Sunday.
Well, and if you're going to get, mm-hmm, together on a Friday, that's the day Jesus got crucified. So what are you naturally going to, what's the natural mood or topic,
yeah,
going to be? You're not, yeah, going to be talking about Jesus alive. You're going to be talking about Jesus' death.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, I've done the same thing at my church in North Hill. We've done like a Friday night gathering where we focused on that. But, you know, actually one of the actual like logistical problems is we have a Sunday church that rents from us. So gathering on Sunday at our own church, mm-hmm, would be impossible. But for a lot of churches who
you could join them,
don't have that problem. And actually, no, I've gone to Sunday church Adventist, or Sunday church Easter services, not Adventist services.
Sunday church Adventist.
Sunday church Easter services. Yeah. Which means that I should probably quit right now. And
Sunday church.
Which, but yeah, but honestly, and actually legitimately in some Adventist eyes, that would be, you know, that would be like going to a like for some Christians, like it would be like going to a gay wedding. It's like you're supporting it, you know, in essence. Like that's the way people would look at it. Even if you're just like, I just love the people, you know. I love the event and what they're doing. And an Easter event, it's just like this is the most biblical. Like Paul literally says, if Jesus is not alive, our faith means nothing.
Yeah.
And so if anything, it's like that is the reality of celebration.
Yeah. Christianity hinges on the resurrection. So, and like Adventists obviously believe that, like there's, you know, like we all believe that, but like what you're talking about is the emotional reaction, like experiencing, like letting it sink in that truth and expressing that as a community.
What have you experienced, Sean?
Because like, I mean, okay.
You said you kind of, I remember you saying you kind of disagree. You didn't experience that necessarily, but you're saying that you recognize there is the feeling of like, oh yeah, like we believe that theologically, but we're not reacting emotionally. Yeah. But what was your experience?
So, and obviously we're talking about our four perspectives, right? And we all grew up in a very similar area at a similar time. So, I'd be interested to see like what other people would say. I would say for me, I never once in my life thought, man, we just don't do Easter right, like as Adventists. Like that never crossed my mind. But as we talk about it, I can see how, you know, maybe as a church we could be doing a better job of finding ways to be intentional about celebrating it. But I wouldn't say that I ever felt like we weren't doing it justice with our church services. At the same time, I can see how you mentioned like it tends to be more somber. We focus on the crucifixion. There's been individual pastors, whether it be Easter or not, that have focused on the resurrection and have celebrated that through a sermon or a talk. Mm-hmm. And I know Adventists that do celebrate it, but I would say as a culture at large, maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe we don't really celebrate it as much as other denominations do, as other Christians do, but I'm not 100% sure. I'm not fully convinced yet that that's true, but the reasons you brought up, yeah, they could be reasons why that's limited us on doing that. Yeah. I definitely agree that with Sunday worship, like I've been to, it's been a while, but there was a couple times I would visit during college, different Sunday churches and see what they were doing. And I remember initially, like in my head, I didn't think about it, but I felt uncomfortable. Like it felt like this these are not my people.
Yeah.
And, which is a weird feeling. And I even know some others at my church, at other places where they've gone to Sunday churches, but they don't always mention it. Or when they do, it's like, kind of like, oh well, yeah, I was just going to check it out, like you're still my church fan. Like they feel a need to explain why
they feel guilty.
It's like you went to a bar, you know,
right?
Like
I was just there for the fries.
I went there, I only drank water, and I hung out with just a few of my friends.
I was there for a Bible study.
So even beyond this topic of Easter, I think there is something to be said about that idea of like, can we just go worship with other people when it's not Sabbath? Yeah. Like there's nothing that says we can't do that. In fact, there can be something healthy about that. I think all the points you brought up, I agree with. I'm still trying to wrap my head around, you know, what would we do better, or what is holding us back from truly celebrating Easter, if that is really a problem.
That's a good question, but
I feel like in my experience, you know, mine was similar to you, Sean, and I feel like growing up in Adventism, you don't really, I guess you don't really ask the question maybe, and you don't really know anything else, you know, especially when you grow up in, you know, an Adventist community like we did. And, I often tell friends who are not Adventists, like, yeah, Adventism is like an all encompassing lifestyle. It's a different type of, religion to like, you know, like, I don't know.
Being a Baptist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's closer to like Judaism, or like if you're, you know, a Muslim or something like that, like it's like your doctor's Adventist, your healthcare's Adventist, you know, like especially when you live in like an Adventist community, like a lot of the ones that we grew up in, there's like an Adventist store nearby where you get all the veggie food, you know.
I've had an Adventist dentist my whole life. Just a fun fact.
Nuts?
Like it just like lined up that way.
That's wild.
Like I was not specifically seeking out an Adventist dentist.
Yeah.
In, like, after college, it just happened.
That's
does
wild.
He call, does just he, when he is going to give you your dentures, does he call it the second coming of your teeth?
Yes. Yes. And you know, he sings, you know what he sings? Crown him with many crowns.
Well done. Oh, well done, Sean. I'm enameled with you right now. Well done. But isn't that wild? Like, how many, like, Sikhs or, like, I don't know, you know, Native Americans have Sikh or Native American dentists for their whole life? Like, that's pretty wild. That's pretty random. But
so, I can say, yeah, I honestly never thought about that, Anthony.
All this to say, I feel like it's cultural. I feel like it's a cultural expressionary thing. And I felt like I didn't notice the difference until I went to other churches. So I went to non-denom churches and I was like, oh, wow, they like they shoot like 50 balloons into the air, you know, like when the church service begins, or like everyone seems genuinely excited, not like they hate being there. Like, and I'm not, and I'm,
and there's, yeah. And there's a problem where, and we, as we talked about earlier, where it almost gets to be commercialized and hype driven.
Exactly.
But yet the attitude behind it is what,
well, to me, it's like, you know, the way you would celebrate anything that you are normally celebrating, like a birthday or a graduation, like you're excited, you're emotionally stoked. And, it seemed like in our tradition, culturally, we come from more ascetic or Puritan or whatever, you know, whatever it is, where we're a little more reserved, a lot more like careful about expressing publicly like excitement, joy, exuberance, you know.
Well, yeah. It's interesting too, because like early Adventism was crazy.
Yeah, that's true. It was nuts.
Like you had people like falling on the floor, being stiff for hours, you know, like.
That sounds like a party. Just, falling on the floor. Yeah.
The Adventists were the inventors of planking. Yep.
I really don't want to. Yeah. But like you had a lot of what you might call Pentecostal ideas or actions.
Yeah, like charismatic expression.
Whereas it, over time, as Adventism became more legalistic and focused on rules and keeping them, like inherently what that starts to crush out of you is any sort of emotional response, because then it becomes really all about what you're doing. It becomes behavior driven as opposed to from like an emotional relationship from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I'm still trying to wrap my head around, you know, I don't think it's always somber, at least again, in my experience, it's never been overly somber.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But like in your head, like, 'cause Jesse, you brought up like it gets hyped up, but so in your head, like it's not necessarily just the actually how the service plays out, but just the spirit of the people going there. So not like having those balloons or having like something necessarily change in the service, but
I feel like it's both.
It's just like the attitude. Is it more the attitude? Oh, so both, like the combination of the attitude of the people initially getting there and how it's treated in the service.
Yeah, I'd say it all sucks. So yeah, Adventism is just no. Okay.
Well,
I'd say it's both.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I feel like I don't know very many Adventist churches. Looking back on the ones I went to growing up, that you know, I could look back and say I think they probably got together, like the leadership team got together and said, "How can we show through the service that we're excited that Jesus is alive?" I feel like that conversation never happened once, and I feel like that's not. You know, just me trying to be critical because I feel like that's just not what we think of
so
culturally.
But you guys would say specifically Jesse and Anthony, you guys would say because you visited other churches and viewed and saw the way they treated Easter and the way their congregation treated Easter, that kind of changed your perspective about, man, we don't really do this as well. Is that what you say would kind of, that's what flipped the switch?
Yeah, you know, like when you go to your Adventist school, like your whole life, and you're just kind of grow up in it, and then you go to this public school that has like millions of dollars in funding, and you're just like, oh wow, they have a really nice gym, and then you go back to your school and like, this sucks.
I was gonna say it's like when you go to your friend's house and they're like, hey mom, can I have ice cream for breakfast? And their mom's like, yeah, sure, honey. And I'm like, my mom would rather die than give me ice cream for breakfast. It's like
vegetables.
That.
Yeah.
So, okay, my follow up question.
Here's a single asparagus.
So, here's my follow up question to Jesse and Anthony: is since you've experienced that, has that informed or changed? Since you've both been pastors, has that changed how you viewed in your churches what Easter should be?
Yeah, I think the problem is still in my own head. I don't think it's actually with my church. My church was pretty progressive and would go with a lot of different things. It's the church Eric grew up in, so that also has, I think, probably some bearing on how you've experienced it, Eric. But yeah, so like I think that it's actually more in my head of like, I don't even know what to do with this. Actually, the church that rents from us, I'm pretty good friends with the pastor. His name is Dan. He's a Foursquare pastor. They're pretty Pentecostal. And I'm good friends with the guy. And he, you know, he'll ask me like, oh, what are you guys doing for Easter? And I'm like, what do you do for Easter? like they'll have plays. They go all out. They do this amazing stuff. And it's not that like every church does it poorly. I actually just saw, I don't remember who it was, but I saw during this COVID-19 crisis and not having, you know, church on location, they had a drive-through. This is Adventist church. They had a drive-through where people could come pick up a bouquet of flowers and put it on a cross. And so it was really cool. The end of the thing was the cross. It looks beautiful with a bunch of like spring flowers on it. Mm. And I've seen that done in church, but it was really cool because they did it, you know, in the context of the not having church on location. But the reason I bring it up is because people, it's not like Adventists don't have semblances of it. And maybe we're getting better at it. But I think that like the overall feeling behind, oh, Easter is it's cut short of what it should be and could be in essence because of, I mean, first and foremost, I think it's because of the day. We're on Saturday, so it's a little bit hard to get excited about that. But then second, I think it does have something to do with theology.
Yeah.
That we've never really looked at the resurrection as the main, like the main point of celebration. If anything, the things that were more pushed overall in church were behavioral things. And the resurrection does not really have much to do with your behavior.
Or at best, theological things, like the second coming, state of the dead.
Yeah.
Like those things were celebrated, and at least so as far
when,
as Adventist
when you
identity.
Get to Easter, you're just like, yeah, Jesus is alive. Okay, I'm going to go back to being, you know, the good Adventist that I was.
So let me ask
Maybe that's the feeling.
Is this a weird question? Maybe this is totally off base. Do you think our focus on the second coming distracts us from the resurrection?
So much.
I do, yeah.
Because, you know, like it's written in our name. Like we're very, like that's a big part of our identity as Adventists is the second coming. Like that's happening. Not only it's happening, but we believe it's happening soon, which is a whole other topic. But
it is.
But again, like that's our hope. That's where we celebrate as Adventists. Would that make sense? Because I've heard a lot of, mm-hmm. I'll agree with you guys. I've overall heard more celebration from Adventists on the second coming.
On the second coming.
Than
yeah.
the
oh
resurrection.
We do so much.
Isn't that wild?
So much around that.
So there is celebration in Adventism, but it's on some different things. We celebrate Sabbath. We celebrate the second coming.
Do we celebrate Sabbath?
Sabbath is a happy day. Happy day.
Perfect timing.
I mean, that's a celebration.
The reason I say that is because I think the second coming has this future reward, and we don't know what to do with present day. And I think that's what Easter is why Easter is so powerful is because if Christ is alive, that means that Jesus Christ can affect my life today. Like that's one of the, like if Jesus died and forgave and through the process of him dying, it's this forgiveness of sins, it's the bringing out of the reality of sin and showing who God is and who we are all mixed in this one thing, and that God forgives us. That's the cross.
Yeah.
And then the problem is when you get to the resurrection, if you're all about the forgiveness of sins so that we can go to a good place, then that's going to severely hamper your celebration of the thing that happens next, which is that Jesus Christ is alive. And the reason that Jesus Christ is alive means so much is because if he's still dead in the grave, then we're still the same people that we were before. So we're forgiven, but we're still the same people. And we're going to make the same mistakes. Whereas the whole promise that Jesus gives before he leaves, I'm going to send my spirit into the very midst of you, into your own lives, so that it will change you from the inside out. That's the promise. So Jesus Christ being alive means the utter world to us, because if he's not, then he can't affect our lives. And so, which some Adventists then turn into perfectionist theology. But I mean, that's why it matters. But if it's the second coming, we only need to be forgiven. That's what the feeling is. And then you have to put in your own work to then become good enough to be accepted into the good place.
That was a mouthful.
You're welcome.
I agree with all of it.
What day is it?
No, I loved it. I agree and I resonate, and I have also felt that feeling that the emphasis on the one day coming of Jesus, the celebratory feeling, as you said, Sean, that growing up, that was far more celebrated than Jesus being alive, than the whole hinge of Christianity itself, which is pretty wild. And I think to me, in my own Christianity, as I've gotten older and journeyed and learned and read, I think that I've had to kind of backtrack a little bit and go back to the foundation, my foundational Christian pillars, and like the resurrection, and really look at those and remind myself, wow, this is the, you know, the foundation that everything else can be built on. And that's where the beauty comes from, the bottom up, not the top down, to me at least. And
yeah, I mean, I think
when you say
groups...
bottom up, top down, what do you mean by that?
I mean, like Christianity itself starts with the resurrection, you know, like it starts with the confession that Jesus is alive, that the tomb is empty. And,
yeah,
and for
that's what started the Christian movement, is what you're saying.
Exactly. And I think for me, as I've gotten older and had experiences with other Christian families, and also done a lot of reading and learning, I think that has become so much more precious to me, as I realize, wow, that's everything. I can get a lot of other things wrong theologically, but if I get that wrong, then it doesn't matter. Like if I miss that, yeah. You know?
Yeah. I was going to say too, like for me, like looking at that, I can agree that became a very important point for me. Maybe not as much like, yeah, emotionally like that's important. But like I've told you guys, and I've talked about it before, like connecting rationally or just having that connection, that's what leads to, mm-hmm. for me, emotionally opening up spiritually, is having that grounding or that starting place. Like I can feel grounded in this being true. And that allows me to really explore that, you know, and how I express that with my relationship with God. And yeah, like everything hinges on Jesus rising from the dead. Like that all, like that's where, like Anthony, you said, it starts with that. And so like going through, like, you know, we've heard of the Case for Christ with Lee Strobel and other talks that get into really knowing that actually happened. Like mm-hmm. there's reason to believe that happened.
Yeah.
And there's substantial evidence for that. And not trying to get this too much into head knowledge, but that is valuable. And for me, that was important going through that process. And on my own, almost on my own, like getting to that point, like, man, this is where it starts. That's the beginning of why this matters and why life matters. You know, all the biggest questions start with that. And that worldview, the Christian worldview has to start there, or it just gets messed up and it gets off focus. And I would say that Adventism would get off focus if we don't focus on that first.
Well, I think that's why it has gotten off focus, though. Like that, in essence, is because we have focused so much on behavior and things like that. That Easter in of itself, it has theological. We've already talked about this, but it has theological meaning, but little bearing on our actual like why it changes us. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's maybe in some ways we feel like it's. This is just me speculating, right? Mm-hmm. Is it beneath us because it's too simple? Like that's
Ooh,
the simple
yes.
one.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
100%.
Because,
I think that's,
you know,
the feeling.
Because a lot of our doctrine or the core unique tenets of Adventism tend to be in the depths of prophecy.
Well, actually, and too, think about atonement, right? Like atonement has been fought over for centuries, and it's the most complicated, like you can make a complicated mess out of atonement, which in essence ends on the cross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what good does, I mean, like once you get to the resurrection, it's like, oh, okay. So Jesus is alive.
Yeah.
Cool. Like,
so here's the thing too, like the short version of this, cause we could talk about all these different, like we'll eventually talk about different Adventist beliefs and doctrine.
Yeah.
But the short answer is this, even if you find that to be valuable and important, and I do, I find a lot of the Adventist core doctrine and the pillars of the faith, I find them to be important, but ultimately all they literally do is point back to the cross and its significance. Mm. Like that's all it comes down to. So if at any point they're important on their own, like if like we get to Sabbath importance, or we get to atonement, or the significance of the sanctuary, or any mm-hmm. of those points, if at any point they become important on their own, just as a source of identity for a church, then it's literally useless. So
Yeah.
So it has to point back to the cross. And for me, it does. They all point back to the cross and add significance to it, just going back to the resurrection. But again, it's the, you don't even have to go down that route yet. Like you just need to start. And like you're saying with Easter, just go back to the simple fact that Jesus is alive. He rose from the dead. And that because of that, everything else matters. Like my life matters.
But we can say that all we want. You know, we can say Easter matters, but if we don't have a theological reason that it does, it doesn't mean much in essence, right? Now, but like, before I even get into this, Eric, what was your experience learning? Like, what was the significance of Easter in your experience?
It's kind of a big question. What do you mean, like, exactly, like the meaning?
Well, because in essence, like both Anthony and I literally went to school and walked through like classes on systematic theology and things like that, which doesn't mean that we have, you know, the end all knowledge of it. It just means that like we've done traditionally a lot more thinking into how all of this might be important and why it might work, mm-hmm. simply because of our education and our jobs. And Sean, I know that you took quite a few like religion classes as well, so I'm sure that you had at least some direction into that. But Eric, you haven't had that, and that's not to say that you're just like, I guess again, whenever
I'm just
I ask
ignorant.
These questions, yeah, exactly. You're a lowly layperson.
That's what I'm trying to say.
No, my reason asking you, Eric, is because you have a valuable place in this conversation in not having focused on these things to the minutia that we have.
Yeah.
Meaning that you have experienced what most people experience. And so, what did you feel was the significance? And if you didn't feel like mm-hmm. it was significant, that's fine.
No, I mean, I think in my experience, I would definitely rank like Easter was kind of below Christmas in terms of like,
oh wow,
you know, spiritual significance.
Well, you don't get presents for Easter, so.
Well, that, I mean, you get candy.
That's why. So that's why he ranked it below Christmas.
That's
if I was six,
I mean, every kid's going to rank would be so Easter much below better. Christmas. maybe I just still hang on to that. I think there's maybe some validity to I think Sean brought this up, maybe it was you, Jesse, of how, in a way, like there's so much theological depth you can go to with the cross and atonement and Christ's sacrifice, and Easter is kind of just like the happy ending, mm-hmm. that we don't like dive into like the theological implications a lot, other than like, you know, Jesus is alive, so now he can make a difference in our lives today.
Mm. Yeah,
that's kind of like, you know, I didn't really go too much deeper than that. I feel like if I'm remembering correctly, my family, we kind of usually kind of Sabbath of Easter weekend was kind of the spiritual day. Mm-hmm. And then Easter morning, you know, when we were little, we'd have like Easter baskets and we'd do an Easter egg hunt.
Unwrap mm-hmm. the eggs under the tree.
start mixing
go,
everything.
Go out
we
to
had
the
to,
chicken coop.
If we wanted to eat dinner, we had to actually catch a wild bunny and then skin it.
To get it alive.
And,
find
it.
The eggs inside.
This is a total random aside, but when you're little and they're like, you know, changing your clothes, did they ever say like, skin the bunny? And you'd like put your hands up and you'd
that's,
like, take off your shirt?
That's a very white.
Absolutely not.
That's a very white people thing. That's extremely white. That's the whitest thing
I've heard all day. That's a homeschool thing.
I guess when your dad's Canadian, you just
I'm Canadian,
skin the bunnies all the time.
But I'm black, and that's the whitest thing I've heard
that's
all week.
That's a different...
Yeah, but you're
Canadian and you're black, which is a totally different thing than
you're from the streets
Canadian.
Of Canada, Anthony.
Exactly. The streets of Red Alberta.
The streets of rural Alberta. In essence,
Sorry, I'm interrupting you. Can I... No, I'm going to let you talk.
All I was going to say is that is a huge portion of this, where if you worship on Sunday, it's the culmination of the weekend, if that makes sense.
Right.
So it naturally gains more significance in your psyche because this is the culmination. And we were talking a little bit before we started recording about like sort of the way stuff was treated early on in scripture, like early on in the church. And yeah, at least from my research, I'm sure there's other people who could put into this, put more into this, but in essence, like most days were treated similarly to, like, in essence, the churches, the people in church would gather together almost every single day, very early on. And then, but then Sunday, there was this different thing that they would do where they would not kneel down to pray because of what Jesus had done, they could come boldly before the throne of God. And so they didn't come in humility. They came in the reality that they have been freed and forgiven. And because Jesus is alive, that means that they are, that them and God have this even tighter relationship than before. Like, I mean, there's so much significance in them not kneeling down to pray. And so, yeah, so like there was significance on that Sunday. They made it different on purpose because it meant something to them. But then Adventists, as soon as we get Saturday into the whole thing, now we cannot touch Sunday for fear of apostatizing and not being what we're literally named after.
Yeah. And I think, so two things. First thing, Sean, back to something you said that I found was really poignant was, I think there has been historically within the Adventist Church, and I'm interested in if you agree with this or not, but like a sort of perspective that we have a unique identity that is separate and different from the rest of other Christian churches. And our unique identity is to call the world back to specific truths about God and the Bible that have been lost. And so I think because of that, there has been like a de-emphasization or de-emphasizing, that's way less complicated of a word, a de-emphasizing of kind of some of the basic baseline Christian truths, which are like Jesus is alive. And because when your whole identity is wrapped up in, you know, that's what the other churches, you know, focus on. Our focus is the second coming. Our focus is the health message. Our focus is Sabbath keeping, you know, not disparaging those, but saying because we viewed our identity as different, I think there has been a sort of a de-emphasizing of sort of the basic, you know, Christian truths.
It may have not even happened intentionally. It just happened organically as we felt that we had a specific remnant message. There's another topic we need to talk about. The idea that, you know, Jesus is returning soon, so we've got to tell this message quickly.
Right.
And with that, maybe original sense of urgency that the founding fathers and mothers of Adventism felt like, oh yeah, we need to focus on these spots. And so, oh, the other church is already covering the resurrection. Yes, we agree with that as Christians, but maybe that's not the focus right now. And maybe that just happened naturally. It probably wasn't intentional to,
yeah, I think it did,
to do that because, you know, all Adventists have always agreed and taught the resurrection and said it's good, but is it something that we celebrate? Is it something that we really value as a core of our identity as Christians? And so I think that's what we're trying to figure out there is are we really doing that well? And should we be focusing on that more? Should that be the start, maybe the starting point? So if we're going to talk about the other pieces, if we're going to say the other parts of Adventism matter, it's got to start with the resurrection.
Yeah.
And it's got to branch out from there. And if it holds up, then great. But if not, then it's a waste of time.
Yeah, I think maybe this expresses what I have felt in going to some non-denom churches. When you go to those churches, you realize their entire identity is wrapped up in the resurrection. Their entire identity as a church is wrapped up in Jesus rising from the dead in the empty tomb. And I think, and that's sort of it's like they boil down to the essential of Christianity and they're like, this is the one thing we'll stand on, you know? Whereas, you know, for us, as you said, the Adventist feeling and movement was kind of birthed out of that calling to be a remnant, you know, community that had a specific mission for the world. And so which is not that mission. I mean, which is not that message of the resurrection. It's specifically different. And so I think because of that, as you're saying, unintentionally, just throughout history, our church just never felt called to specifically emphasize that message. Whereas when you go to, you know, say Elevation Church, North Carolina, you know, Church Home in Seattle, both mega churches, you know, like they see their whole identity as the resurrection. So I think it's pretty striking. And I think that's maybe the reason why, for me, as I felt walking into those spaces, I feel like, oh, wow, like this church really values this because it's their whole identity. Like it's everything, you know, it's when it's everything you are, it's communicated through the culture, through the way people talk, through what is spoken about up front, you know?
Jesse, I think you connected it back to, you briefly mentioned perfectionism as being an issue, or the idea of like, just like you need to be a certain level before God, and even like an idea of like what we should do here on earth. And Anthony, what you just mentioned, like maybe sometimes it feels like the celebration of the resurrection is an afterthought, is because I do know for sure that there are Adventists that fear leading down a path of over fixating on the resurrection to the point where it leads to thinking that I don't have to do anything. Like I'm saved by grace. Therefore,
one
author that I've always liked is Dietrich Bonhoeffer. He does this book on, and he has a concept on cheap grace versus I don't remember if he calls it costly grace or there's another word he uses, but he goes through that concept of cheap grace, and it's really powerful in seeing like, yes, there is a certain call to action. Like in your heart, things will change. You will be transformed when you actually truly accept what Jesus did for you and what the Holy Spirit can do in your life. Like that's something that happens in a Christian's life. If nothing happened to you, then what's the point, right? Here and now, there's something that needs to happen. And so it's weird because it's funny and almost ironic, Jesse, that we as Adventists fear going down that path of maybe like Christian apathy, like, oh yeah, Jesus has saved me and I'm good to go. I don't need to do anything else. But at the same time, we're going from one extreme to the other and we're missing the resurrection altogether. And so where is the grace at all? So there, it's still grace.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to kickstart the idea of living a better life, a more holy life, whatever you want to call it. And so the whole even idea of being made more perfect and all the ideas that go into that, that would not exist without the cross and the grace that we've been saved by, right? That's the starting point. Like that can't even exist. That conversation of, hey, what is God calling me to do better today? Like, what path is God leading me down today? That wouldn't exist without that resurrection, the initial part of it. So, well,
and I think you hit the nail on the head when you said that there's this fear of, oh no, if we hyper-focus on the resurrection, then we won't focus on behavior afterwards.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting because the whole idea of Jesus's death is the fact that we were not the people that we were made to be, you know, to the point where we were so evil and so messed up that we literally killed God. And it's all about God's character in that, how he comes, how he offers his life, how he forgives, how he doesn't come back with vengeance to destroy us. Like it's all about his character, which is hilarious because then all of a sudden afterwards, it becomes a focus on my own behavior and my character when it's never been that. Like that God's love, his kindness, his compassion, his goodness, his mercy, his justice, all of that is just simply who he is, and I can't match that. And so the focus on perfectionism gets really crazy, but it goes straight back to Easter because we don't know what to do with that. If we focus too much on it, oh no, we're never going to act differently. But if we don't focus on it enough, then we don't have anybody who can change us.
Yeah.
And so it creates this theological dilemma, which is really weird that we get stuck in that. And yet it also makes a ton of sense of how we got there.
So as I've been like processing through this, as we've been talking, would maybe a healthy reaction to all of this, like if we recognize that we need to be making the resurrection more important in all of our churches, you have to think about like with church history, that's where Christianity starts, right?
Yeah.
Christianity starts with the resurrection. That's what leads to Pentecost. That's what leads to the Spirit moving and leading to growth. And that's what leads to affirming through Paul, Peter, others, like affirming what it means to be a Christian. So when people asked and wanted to know what were the beliefs that define Christianity, that those all came after the resurrection, right? So in some ways, shouldn't Easter almost in some ways be like our reset as Christianity? And like that moment to stop and celebrate, just make it simple, make it the celebration. And from there, just like the early church did, look at and say, okay, now what? Like that upper room experience, like waiting for the outpouring of the Holy Spirit, right? So once you've celebrated and you've bought into the resurrection and just realize that's what matters most here,
yeah.
Then you get into like, okay, you're planning outreach or evangelism. You're planning what like sermon series to do, what to focus on with your church, what our global church should focus on, whatever you're trying to get into. It should start from that kind of ground zero. And then if we get into topics like, oh yeah, Sabbath still Sabbath matters, or other parts of our faith, like as Adventists, these things matter. Well, it should have started from that celebration of Easter. Would that change our mindset? Do you think that's where we should start? Does that make sense? Like a refresh?
Yeah, like you're in essence saying that this started a whole global movement. And what if every year it was the refresh for across the world? Yeah, I think that to some degree that is how it's treated. Like it's the culmination or the starting point for some people's years, you know, their theological or their sermonic years and things like that. In other churches, but for us, it tends to be an afterthought. But I agree with you. Like, I totally do agree with that being the restart. But at the same time, I think that there if there's no personal meaning to what Easter is, then we as Adventists will never really celebrate it well.
I'm also skeptical because I tend to be a little more cynical and more skeptical. I think I'm skeptical that I think it's really hard. I think it's really hard to shift people's mindsets on what is valuable within their religious framework and how to express that, because it's so learned. Like so much of it, as we talked about earlier, is like cultural, you know, like, and also just an aside on the cultural thing, you know, like, I feel like that's a little bit of BS to me, because, you know, the same people who like Easter Sunday, you're in church and, you know, like they're not excited. It's real somber. I'm like, I want to see you at like your favorite sports team's like game, or like at your baby's birthday shower. Like you're stoked. You're excited.
But see, I think that that's a little bit of a fallacy.
You think so?
Yeah, because it's like that literal statement has been used to guilt people into excitement in church for a long time. I've heard that from Adventists.
That's fair.
You know, it's like, oh yeah, you guys will go in wind and rain and snow to your favorite sports team, but you won't show up to church. And I'm like, that's because what sports offers is genuine, tangible, felt meaning in that moment.
You feel and like the resurrection doesn't offer genuine, tangible, felt meaning?
I'm saying that people don't understand why it has that meaning for them. Does that make sense? Like, so when I go to a sports game, it's right there in front of me. My team either wins or loses. My team is doing well, then I'm excited and happy. If they're not doing well, or if we're coming back from far behind, like the Patriots when they were down 28-3 and then came back and won the Super Bowl.
Incredible. Yeah, okay.
I'm a Patriots fan. Anyways, just a caveat, before Tom Brady, I was a Patriots fan because my dad's from New England. So,
how do you like the new Tom Brady jersey?
Oh, man, I'm interested to see how he's going to do there. So anyways, before you goad me into this... My point is that while you're there, it's tangible, felt meaning.
Yeah.
Right. So then when someone's yelling up front, which is, I would say so in both churches, in the somber Adventist church and in the excited over the top charismatic church, I'm saying that as if those are the only two churches in existence. They're not, but
yeah,
let's just use those as examples. Someone is either saying, well, Jesus is alive, you know, and you're like, yeah, cool. I know that theologically. Or someone in the other church is like, Jesus is alive, and that's, you know, and you're just like, okay, dude, chill.
Right.
Like, well, I'm like, either one, it's, if it doesn't have personal meaning to me, then
yeah,
then why would it? And I mean, like, obviously I would love to talk through the theology of it, but I mean, it just in a split second, if we should probably talk about why it has meaning to people theologically, or else Adventists will never get it.
That's literally
I'm
what
saying
I,
that, like, we should do that right now.
Exactly. I totally agree. I guess what I was trying to hit on is not even, but also what I was trying to hit on is, you know, what I feel like when we have historically gone in one direction, I don't think it's like cruel or manipulative or guilt trippy to say like, we can move a little bit in the other direction. And that would be healthy, and that would be great. You know, to an extremely somber person to say like, hey, you know, like, let's get at the root cause of this. Like, you know, are is it just cultural? Is there reason behind that? You know, like, just like to those, you know, extremely charismatic spaces, you know, maybe they could come down a few notches, you know. But I agree that in order to for it to even be meaningful, like, you have to understand why it's meaningful, and you have to theologically understand. And where I began this was, I feel like I'm skeptical about Adventism at large getting understanding deeply Easter, because of all the reasons we've mentioned, because of identity, because of history. And we haven't even gotten into, like, the fact that we come from an Arminian tradition, you know, like, we're a little more, like, unsure about salvation, and, you know, like, there's a little bit of insecurity about stuff like that. So I think I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer, but I feel like it's difficult. It's real difficult to move the cultural dial over, you know.
So, I mean, and Jesse used the sports analogy, like, you don't see, like, the coach of a team or, like, the broadcaster coming out and telling the whole group, like, come on, you guys should be more excited for the team right now. Like, and the reason for that, how absurd would that be at a sport? Like, you already know the people that are coming know why they're there. They're excited for that team. They've bought in, right? And so theoretically, right, the people that are at church, they've bought into this message. But it sounds like what we're trying to get at is maybe the message is skewed or the focus needs to be somewhere else.
What message have they bought into? I think that's
the
question.
So it's trying to unify that message towards the resurrection and creating buy-in to why that should be the main focus and why you should be excited about it.
The grand narrative of Scripture, to try and encapsulate this as quickly as possible, is, in essence, God made us to be, like, as human as possible, like the best humans. And we would be so good to each other and love each other so well. We didn't do any of that. We became horribly destructive and evil. We destroyed the entire world through our societies and our issues and our problems. And it wasn't just a breaking of God's law that caused that. It was just like, we're horrible, messed up people at our core. And that's and the cross is this beautiful coming together of God and humanity, where God and human in Jesus, we see, like, the evil of humanity, like, just played out on Jesus. And we see how Jesus, as the best human ever, as well as who, like, literal representation of God, the image of God, not just the image of God in human, but actual God, how both of those parties react to this, right? And so when we see Jesus on that cross, it is the fullness of evil and the fullness of love displayed once and for all, right?
Yeah.
But then when we get to the resurrection, and that's why, like, it can seem like the cross is the end of the story. And I think, was it you, Eric, who said the resurrection is the happy ending, right?
Yeah.
But the resurrection is literally like, okay, now we saw all of that on display, but we're not any different. We're still the same beings that killed Jesus.
It's the beginning.
And so the key thing is that our sinful, messed up selves, as Paul would say it, have to die the death that we were going to die anyways. We die that symbolically through Jesus Christ. But if we just die, then okay, it's over. We're done. But we're raised to new life with Jesus Christ, which inherently means that now we have been reborn. We have a new opportunity, a second chance. And I love how Paul says in Romans 6, he says, for if we've been united with him in a death like his, we shall certainly be united with him in a resurrection like his. We know that our old self was crucified with him in order that the body of sin might be brought to nothing, so that we would no longer be enslaved to sin. For one who has died has been set free from sin, because you died, you're dead. Now, if you have died with Christ, we believe that we will also live with him. We know that he will never die again. Death no longer has dominion over him, which means that everything that causes us to have any sort of powerlessness against the forces of this world, because we're afraid of death and what that might bring, that has gone. And then when we come to the end of this, he says, then we must consider ourselves dead to sin and alive to God in Jesus Christ, which means that our new life is actually Jesus Christ living and dwelling in us. And if that isn't the core narrative, then what we end up with is that Jesus Christ is cool. Like, he's alive. And now we have to then, through our own effort and through our own, you know, through our own effort and through our own, what's the word?
Our bootstraps.
Good works. We have to make this all happen for ourselves so that we'll be acceptable to him. But the reality is that he loved us so much that now he not only died for us, but now he's alive and wants to live in us in a practical, tangible way in every single day of our lives, which means he wants to be with you and talk with you and be with you. And if you don't have that personal Jesus, because he's alive and there with you, then it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, that's what brings the transformation.
You can yell, Jesus is alive.
Yeah,
because we do get into the trap of how you transform is by thinking about the guilt in your heart. Like, oh man, if I should be doing this better, you shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah.
Like we get into that trap instead of just fixating on the combination of what the cross and the resurrection does. Like the combination.
But see, is it fixating on it, or is it just being with Jesus who is alive? Like, I mean, obviously we have to know the theological truth, but that's the thing that gets me about the resurrection is Jesus is alive and with us. Like he says, I'm going to send my spirit into you. Like I'm going to dwell in you.
Yeah.
And if that isn't the change, like Easter is such a celebration for me in my own heart, because it means that Jesus is literally with me, living in me, slowly and gently transforming me into who, and I'm never going to reach the perfection that some people want to reach, but I will never be the same because of Jesus Christ, because he's actually with me. Not because of some thing that happened in the past, but also because he's currently now in this moment with me because he's actually alive.
Yeah. So as much as I agree with you, I think some people would argue back, and maybe I'm arguing, some Adventists might argue back that, oh, that's too vague when it comes to transformation. And we want tangible, like this is what will happen.
Yeah.
And this is what, like, if you do this, this is what you will see, from those that are truly following Christ. And I think it gets into that realm of like, oh, if you just say like, oh, I'm saved by Jesus, like his, like, and his spirit is living in me, all the things that you said, Jesse, some people look at that and say, yeah, that sounds nice, but is that really, do you really see transformation taking place there? And some people are saying, oh, I should see tangible evidence. I should know you by your fruits, and get into that, that conversation. And it might get off the whole purpose of what Jesus was doing.
The fallacy is when an Adventist looks over at some person on the other end of the spectrum who's like, yeah, like I love Jesus, loves me, and everything is good, and then there's nothing different in their life. We look at them and we're like, oh, that's why we don't believe that. It's like, well, they don't even believe the reality of the gospel.
Yeah.
We're over here just like, yeah, like, you know, I'm doing my best to keep what God wants me to do. And I'm trying to eat healthy and live the way God called me to live. And it's like, but you're just trying to modify your behavior. You don't believe the gospel either. You don't believe that Jesus is alive and tangible and present in your life right now, just as much as the other person doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you,
like there's
would
a certain
guys,
level. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, would you guys agree that Adventism in general is more focused on sanctification than justification?
Ooh, definitely. The big words.
Yeah, those are big words.
The big Adventist terms.
Well, they're Paul. Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, because we use them a lot. But yeah, Paul used those words, justification meaning you've been declared righteous just by decree of God. Like, you are righteous because of everything that's happened. But then there's the second thing, sanctification, which is being made more like Jesus.
Yeah, because I feel like, In my Adventist experience, we kind of are like, yes, we're saved by faith. That's amazing. But what are we doing now? Like, we need to be better. We need to be set apart from the world. Ooh. And with that kind of hyper-focus on behavioral and changing of the heart, which is all good kind of stuff to focus on, I think we kind of de-emphasize kind of, you know, but the resurrection in that.
The language Eric is using is very intriguing to me.
Say more about that, Anthony.
What do you mean?
Well, because I think it's reflective of what I think a lot of people experienced, a lot of non-ministry folk, like the three of us, experienced, like a lot of the language they heard, like all the language that you just used, I think, it's indicative, I think. And I would agree that sanctification, and I think you go.
No, I'm just kind of thinking, like, Adventism in general is so much like less evangelistic in the gospel message compared to other denominations. At least, I mean, in my view, I guess, or my perception, because, like, you know, when we have evangelism series, it's like Revelation and Daniel, and about Bible prophecy and Jesus' second coming. Like, I don't, maybe, how many other denominations try to convert other denominations.
Maybe that's my perception. We're kind of built on that.
Like, yeah, our thing is like, we try to harvest the other Christians into our camp, you know, and like, because we have the right doctrine. And like, if I can convince you that the seventh day is the Sabbath and that, you know, the health message and the second coming and save the dead, like, that's like our thing.
That's biblical truth all of a sudden. Yeah.
If someone else, if a Baptist becomes Adventist,
it's huge.
We want to baptize them, you know?
Yeah.
I always thought it was kind of weird because I'm like, if you've already been like baptized into the family of Christ, like, why do you need to be baptized into Adventism?
I mean, there's a thing called profession of faith.
The Remnant Church of Biblical Prophecy, which we need to talk about more.
Well, there's profession
also,
of faith.
Also, I just want to say this. Catholic converts are like, just any convert, it's like, you know, it's like, I caught a nice, let's say a foot-long fish, right? But like,
where's this analogy
going? If you catch a Catholic, it's just like, dang, we got them from Protestantism, we got them from Catholicism. Heck yes.
Well, then we definitely had to baptize them because they just got sprinkled.
The irony is that Catholics make the best Adventists because they're so used to the rule system.
Yeah, exactly.
They make the absolute best.
We need
to
talk about that.
Okay, so really quick. This could almost be another conversation because it gets into another unique thing I found out that Adventism does that I'm not sure other denominations do, is that when we baptize not only like into Christianity, but into church membership.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's technically connected in the sense that policy wise, if they're connected, the next thing that we do is immediately invite them into church membership. That being said, if you separated it out by a month, which is probably a better idea, it's not
the retention rate
technically illegal.
Oh, are you saying that because that's what you've done personally? You want to just air all your dirty laundry?
I will give you no further comment.
Do you make them read the baptismal vows?
No.
Because that's like the traditional, like,
I also
read
don't.
The baptismal vows and say like,
they're
I
baptized because they're baptized because they are symbolizing that they have united themselves with Christ in his death and in his resurrection. And they're inviting the Spirit of God to live now and dwell in them and change them.
I agree with you, Jesse, but I don't think that's what our church does.
I don't think we do that. But I'm just saying that I think it's completely wrong and doesn't make any sense.
I'll
see you on the other side, not having a job.
Wait, when you guys became church members, you had to go into the basement and skin a bunny, right?
It was a gerbil for me.
Was that just me?
Guinea pig.
Actually, I had to bring my favorite dog as an act of showing how dedicated I was.
Yikes.
As a dog owner, that's the saddest thing.
Okay. Wow. What a great path that went down. So, okay.
Here's my last thing, just real quick. Here's my last thing. As for Easter, I definitely think that we have to re-engage with what Easter means theologically, like for the personal person. And as we re-engage with that, I think it will shift and change the way that we interact with it on a whole church level, because then we will actually understand the meaning behind why we might be excited not just be the hype person yelling, "Christ is risen," and everybody saying, "Yeah," but not knowing why. Or on the other hand, as Adventists, being the people who are like, "Jesus is alive," and then all of us thinking legalistically that we now need to be different in through our own actions.
Yeah.
So that's my two cents into, I don't think that we should necessarily change practices. Maybe a few as part of it, but like, I mean, it's got to come from the heart. It can't just be hype.
Yeah. I would connect that even to what Eric said with, you know, why is it that our evangelism is on those specific topics? And I think those topics are fine, and you know, the topics aren't bad. It's just what should be the beginning. Like, if we're introducing people to Christianity, which if we're doing worldwide evangelism, many times that's what it is. if it's other denominations, then you have those separate conversations, I guess, but you should still start even with the other denominations. Mm-hmm. You want to start with the cross, right? It, like get your grounding together and say, we agree on this. This is the most important thing. This is where all of this starts and where it matters, like with the resurrection of Jesus. But with all of that, you would have to say, okay, this is why this next path matters. Like, this is why the next thing matters. So if we're going to get into those other things like prophecy, it's because those things point to Jesus. Hmm. Like, those things matter because they point to Jesus. The second coming matters because it points to what Jesus already did. Like, we have that excitement because we already have the celebration of the resurrection. Like, that's, you know, like the whole idea of like the war's already been won. There's still battles going on. So it's like we should be experiencing that victory every day, that celebration every day. Like, look, the war's won. Like, we're excited for the second coming, but we already have that victory. And we're recognizing that more and more each day. Mm. So, yeah, I think it would change how we do outreach, how we do evangelism, if we rooted ourselves there from the beginning and then allowed that to inform, okay, where should we go from here with what we teach, what should be important.
Yeah, I agree. I think with Adventism especially, we kind of have our identity in knowing all these intricate doctrinal complexities that kind of mm-hmm. sets us apart from the rest of Christianity. And I think that if we can take more advantage of Easter to kind of reset ourselves in the fact that Jesus has conquered death and conquered sin, and for us kind of get back to basics, I think that's something that our church culture needs more of.
Yeah. Anthony, any closing thoughts?
Oh, somehow this always happens where I'm the one. I always want to be, I always want to end on a positive note. I feel as if I, but then I don't. I feel as if, this is what I think. These are the things that I think. I think because of our history, I think because of our identity, and I think because of our mission, or what we feel is our mission in the world, it's very difficult for us to connect as a denomination to what one of my favorite authors, Timothy Keller, calls the anti-religion, Christianity. It's the idea of religion flipped upside down. Everything that Jesse was saying earlier, like the idea that Christianity is not an outline for how to get to God somehow by working harder, but instead it's the opposite. It's that God calls me son, he calls us family, and the direction isn't me up to him trying to get there somehow, but it's from him down that he comes to me, that home comes here, home comes and finds me when I'm lost. And that's what Christianity is. And I think that because of our history, it's so easy for us to fall into religion. It's so easy for us to fall into a legalistic framework of how to relate to God. And I think that when we do that, we lose sight of why Easter matters at all. But I think if we, as you guys are all saying, if we all commit and connect to and you know, aim towards the idea of the God who comes and finds me, then I think I think there's a reclamation that we can do within the church. But I think that's really hard. And I don't know. I think I'm not overly optimistic, to be honest, of Adventism at large doing that. I think it's so ingrained. I think it's so ingrained culturally to view God in the Bible and our identity in the ways that we do, that it's really difficult. And so I just think it starts personally with each one of us, like, remembering and reconnecting with the story of ourselves and reminding ourselves in our own hearts, Jesus is alive, and that matters to me personally. So those are a lot of words, but.
Well, I have to make a quick, I need to make a quick correction from our last episode. I said that the Smurfs lived in tree houses and I was wrong. They actually live in mushrooms.
That's what I thought.
Wow.
And so I just, I need to call myself out that, you know, we've made mistakes in past episodes, but that's just unexcusable. I really have no reason for why that should have happened. So I apologize to our listeners. It won't happen again.
We appreciate that.
I hope you can trust us someday soon.
I was actually listening to that episode a second ago, and I thought of that one-off episode of Digimon where they go to Digimon, the animated series, where they go to the tree fort people.
Oh, Digimon Frontier.
Digimon Frontier, yes.
Yeah.
I'm gonna cut all this.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens out there. Just want to thank Eric Edstrom, our producer, for getting the I Haven't Watched the Tiger King Yet award from us here at the podcast. Go watch the Tiger King, Eric. We love you. Thanks for being a producer. All right, we'll see you guys next time on Seeking What They Saw.